So I suspect you had a good time with Professor Ziegler, did you? Good. Okay, good. So, you know, this is reading period, and what we're really doing is reviewing, but we're doing it in the context of some interesting material. First, just a little bit on some more of these so-called condensation reactions, and then we'll go on to talk about, this time, two unnatural products, and next time, a natural product, and how they were prepared, and why. Okay, first, the benzoin condensation. This is a very interesting reaction where two molecules of benzoin come together to give benzaldehyde, our old favorite, come together to give benzoin in 80% yield. And it has a very interesting mechanism and a catalyst, potassium cyanide, that doesn't appear in the product. There are no atoms from potassium cyanide in the product, but it's a very special catalyst for doing this reaction. Okay, so how does it work? So where do you think it begins? How is potassium cyanide well set up to begin this reaction? Okay, Derek? Okay, good. So, where we're going is to make this bond. That's the bond that connects two benzaldehydes. But as Derek says, but notice that what we really need to do that, to make that bond, for the top molecule to add to attack the bottom one to form this, we want, if that were a carbon anion, if there were a high HOMO on this carbon, then it could attack this carbonyl. Okay? So if we had this anion, then we could attack the carbonyl and we would have formed a new bond. But unfortunately, what that carbon is famous for is not for having a high HOMO, but for having a low LUMO. What is it that's big on this carbon? The pi star. So you need to turn it around to make it to be an anion rather than a cation, a high HOMO rather than a low LUMO. And cyanide does this, and it does it as Derek suggested. So here's our cyanide. It comes along. And now, you could imagine that it would pull off the proton and make a carbon anion. But it's not nearly basic enough. The difference in pKa, I mean, HCN is cyanic, hydrocyanic acid, and the proton on that carbon isn't a good acid at all. The difference in pKa is 30, so you can't do that. So it does what Derek says, acts as a nucleophile, and then protonate from the alcohol. So we have this. Yeah.
So could we use a strong base to do this reaction?
But the trouble with a strong base is it would attack the carbonyl.
Oh.
That's what this one did, right? Most strong bases would. And we've seen reduction by hydride comes in, for example, which is a strong base, and reduces the carbonyl, right? Okay, now cyanide comes in again, and this time it acts as a base and does pull off the proton, but it had to add first in order to do this, right? Because now we don't have a carbonyl anymore. Now, why is it that that proton is relatively easy to abstract? Now, Brian? Can't hear very well. Right, there's resonance with the cyanide. The cyanide is a little like a carbonyl. Right, it's like a CO double bond, the CN triple bond. So this will be like an enolate. And more than that, if we to generate this anion, it's not only the enolate, the carbon is alpha to the cyanide group, it's also adjacent to a benzene ring. right? So two ways it gets stabilized. Okay, so cyanide first acts as a nucleophile, then it acts as a base. Okay? So this has accomplished the turning around of the polarity of the carbonyl group from a place where the carbon was partially positive to a case where it's partially negative. Right? Now it can do the reaction we want. And that's called in German Umpolung, which means turning around the poles to make it from positive to negative. Okay, now we can do that reaction we wanted to do. So the carbon anion, it's a sort of enolate, right? Next to the cyanide. If it were a CO double bond, we'd call it an enolate. So that sort of enolate attacks carbonyl. What do you call it when an enolate attacks aldehyde, for example? Do you remember? This is from a week ago. But yeah, if it were attacking a carbon with a leaving group like bromide, that would alkylate alpha to the enolate has an anion, carbon anion, adjacent to the carbonyl in the alpha position. If that anion, that carbon anion, were used to do an SN2 reaction, attack methyl, say iodide, displace the iodide, that would be alkylation. This is different because we're not attacking sigma star, we're attacking pi star here on the bottom, right? So it's adding rather than displacing, right? And that, as you'll remember later, if you don't remember now, is the aldol reaction when an aldehyde enolate or enol attacks an aldehyde. Okay, so it does that normal kind of reaction and generates this. And now cyanide gets into the action again, right? It acts as a base, pulls off the proton, and what else happens that's special for cyanide? What happens when you pull off that proton and you would make O minus, right? Can you see what that can do? Sure.
Cyanide a good leaving group?
Cyanide is a leaving group. It's one of the few carbons that not only can go on as an anion, but can come off again. Right? If you do a Grignard reaction with C minus attacking a carbonyl, it doesn't come off again. But cyanide can, because HCN is acidic. Okay. So now cyanide functions as a leaving group. Right? And that generates the double bond, the CO double bond, and we've got the product by losing HCN. So this is really a neat reaction because of all the different things that cyanide does. It attacks first as a nucleophile to make a thing where it can then act as a base and pull off the proton to make that enolate-style carbon anion, which then attacks. Then it acts as a base and as a leaving group. So cyanide is a very special catalyst for this benzoin condensation, as it's called. Okay. Next, and it's an example of this Umpolung process of making something that would normally react as if it were positive, react as if it's negative. Okay, now the Claisen condensation is another one which is important not only in chemistry but also, as you'll see in a second, in biology. So this is just a rehearsal of the different ways. I can't use my laser pointer because it's in Rome, I believe, where my suitcase is. So a carbonyl could be attacked by a nucleophile. We've seen that make the OH on top. It could, if you have a leaving group on the carbon, it can leave and you get a substitution, okay, where the nucleophile substitutes for the OR, for example. Or when it's an aldehyde, you can have the enolate add. This is what we were just talking about to get the beta hydroxy ketone. The aldol, which remember can then dehydrate and give an alpha-beta unsaturated ketone. Okay, the Claisen is just like the aldol, except it's an ester instead of an aldehyde that's doing the trick, so it has a leaving group on it. So when the enolate that we generated at this carbon here, this carbon was an enolate of an ester, right? When it attacks the carbonyl of another ester, you get this tetrahedral intermediate, which now has a leaving group, which we didn't have up there. There you just protonated to get the aldol. Here you have a leaving group. So in the Claisen, this comes away, and now you have this beta-ketoester, Now, instead of an aldol. So it's this is to the aldol just as that is to the very top one, right? You have a leaving group on the carbonyl. Now there's a problem with the equilibrium of this reaction written in this way, because we started with two esters. So this unshared pair was stabilized by the pi star here in two molecules. In the product, we have that stabilization only in one of the carbonyls, not in the other. Right? So in that respect, this reaction is uphill in energy. It's not favorable. This is less stable than the starting material. But do you notice something special here when you have this base as one of the products? Don, you have an idea? How can these products become more stable than as shown? Max? Right, here's the strong base. And this thing is an acid. Where?
Here.
Which proton?
From the methyl on the far right.
Here? Yeah, if you could take that one off, it would be stabilized by a carbonyl. You see any other ideas? Why is that better? Stabilized by two carbonyls. So now it's downhill in energy. Remember, it's like base treating an ester goes to an acid. Not because the acid itself is especially stable. OH isn't very different from OR. Right? But because the OH will, and a carboxylic acid will react with the base. And the same trick here. The thing goes downhill in energy. So as the book says, in the top case, only one ester is stabilized by resonance, but now it becomes exothermic because the anion is a better one and it gives the pKa's there. Okay, that's the Claisen condensation, which is an important reaction for elongated molecules, but it's especially important in nature where energy is stored as fatty acids, which can also obviously be oxidized to regenerate energy. But the way it gets stored is by having... Yeah, I need to get a pointer here. No, it's okay. Does anybody know what this molecule is called? I wouldn't be surprised if someone knows. That S enzyme is part of what's called, it's a coenzyme called coenzyme A, right? Which is, for our purposes, an alcohol with a sulfur instead of oxygen. So it's a thiol. So coenzyme A is this thing here with SH. So this is like an ester. It's a thioester. And what's the acyl group in this case? What do you name that acyl group? Methyl CO. Come on, you know what that carboxylic acid is. Methyl COOH. Acetyl. So what's this one? It's acetyl CoA. How many people have heard of acetyl CoA? That's what fatty acids are made from. And they're made by a Claisen condensation. Right? So here's acetyl-CoA, a carbonyl with a leaving group on it. Right? Now, what acts in nature? In nature, this would normally be the anion, the enolate, of a thioester. You wouldn't have this CO2 on there. Nature uses that CO2 for a special reason. So this is a little bit different from the normal anion that we would use in a Claisen condensation because it has CO2 on it. Okay, but anyhow, it attacks and the thiol leaves, thiolate, the anion leaves. So we've got the substitution. And now you see what's special about having the CO2 there. Because the CO2 can now be lost to generate this stable enolate. Okay? And the loss of the CO2 is what makes this reaction downhill in the case of in the biological case. Okay? So just as we use extra base to draw the equilibrium of a normal Claisen condensation to the right. In this case, that loss of CO2, which was put on there at the beginning, is what makes it possible. So we get this now, which is like a Claisen condensation. It's a beta-keto ester, right? A beta-keto alcohol is an aldol. That comes from an aldehyde. A beta-keto ester comes from two esters and a Claisen condensation. Yeah? No, there's a lone pair on the sulfur that mixed with pi star, absolutely. But what was your assertion on the basis of that? Oh, that relates to the stability of the product, yes. But that loss of CO2 is what's used to drive it, okay? In the biological case, where you can't use strong base and have the enolate completely formed, right? Okay, so now we're not to a fatty acid yet, but it continues, so there's the driving force. It continues from this beta-keto ester or thioester to be reduced by this thing we've seen before, a source of hydride. Remember the electrophilic aromatic or nucleophilic aromatic substitution, hydride going back on and off. We talked about that before. Okay, so that reduces, that's a hydride adds to the carbonyl here to make the alcohol. Then, this is a beta ester alcohol. Remember, we had beta keto alcohols, beta carbonyls. That was an aldol. This is like an aldol, except that it's an ester here instead of a ketone. But it can do the same reaction. It can undergo an elimination of water. Remember, to alpha beta unsaturated ketone we had before from an aldol. This is the analog with an ester. So we got this, but that can react with this hydride again to make this into a saturated CH2 grouping. Okay, and now that we're there, we can begin a cycle or continue a cycle, because here we have, instead of acetyl CoA, we have four carbons, butyryl CoA. Now you can go exactly again and add these two carbons. So this first cycle added these two carbons here. Now we're going to add these two carbons here. Right? So you'll add two more. It'll be 6, then 8, then 10, then 12, then 14. And so the natural fatty acids have even numbers of carbon atoms, because they're added two at a time in a Claisen-style condensation. Okay, are there any questions about that? You'll study this again in biochemistry, but just to show you that it's related to what we're talking about. Yeah? Here we have R. Oh, but what they mean by this R is a CoA in the biological thing. It's the enzyme. It's the thioester. Yeah. Okay, and now the last of these condensations we're going to talk about is, because we're talking about, especially because it's related to what we're going to talk about on Friday in the review there, which is the so-called Robinson annulation, invented by Sir Robert Robinson, who was the guy that was looking daggers at Ingold because he didn't like Ingold. You may remember that story from last semester. Okay, so first we do this reaction at the top of a base with cyclohexanone, but use this compound, methyl vinyl ketone. Methyl vinyl ketone. Okay, so with the base you make an enolate, which adds now not to the CO double bond, but to the CC. It's a conjugate addition. Right? Remember, a 1,4 style addition, as we talked about last time, or a so-called Michael addition, after Arthur Michael, who invented this. He was a chemist at Tufts University. Okay, so it forms this new bond, adding to the 4 position relative to the oxygen. Again, an enolate. Okay, and now it gets protonated, right? But this is now ready for a second reaction of the sort. Now, we could make here, we could make different enolates here. We have two carbonyls. So one could form an enolate and add to the other one. But there are lots of possibilities because they're two different alpha carbons on this ketone and two different alpha carbons on this ketone. So it looks like a recipe for disaster of all the different products we could get. But you can see that many of these products aren't so good. For example, suppose we made this anion and then tried to attack this carbonyl. Okay, can anybody see anything bad about that? Yeah. Can't hear very well. Why is it hard to form this ring where this carbon forms a bond here? You can imagine this being axial, right, in the cyclohexanone ring, so that the other stuff is sort of up above, that it might get sort of close there. But there's a problem. What about the product? What structural feature would that product have that's not the most desirable? Try again, Henry. It's got a four-membered ring. Okay, so that'd be very strained. Another possibility would be to make this enolate and attack this carbonyl. How about that? Four-membered ring again. Right, that's not so good. You could make this enolate and attack this carbonyl, and that would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 carbons in the ring when you do that, which looks not so bad. But you can't. But it's not going to be so great, because when you make that six-membered ring and look at what possibilities you have, there are going to be things that are not in equatorial positions in that compound. So it's going to be strained. But if you make this anion and attack this carbonyl, which is shown here, then you get this, right? Where everything is hunky-dory, okay? Protonate, you get this. And now, this is an aldol, right? A beta-keto alcohol, or beta-hydroxyketone, right? Which can eliminate water, as we've spoken about before, to give an alpha-beta unsaturated ketone. So that's the Robinson annulation. Why is it called annulation? Victor? The root is what?
Ring.
So what does a Robinson annulation do? It adds a new ring. Right? We started with this cyclohexanone, and now we have a new ring built on there. So we got two rings together, fused, as they're said to be, when they share a bond between them. Okay? And that turns out to be a crucial feature in the structure, as you'll see next time, of steroids, is having a bunch of rings fused together that way. So the Robinson annulation, as you'll not be surprised then to hear, is a key reaction for many synthesis of steroid molecules. And here's a particular example down here which gives a 85% yield of the product. Okay, so we wanted to do those. But now we're getting into full review mode. In the context of talking about the synthesis today of two unnatural products. And the reason that was the motivation for making these products was to settle a question in the theory of organic chemistry. The question is cyclobutadiene anti-aromatic? You know, it has 4n pi electrons, which isn't 4n plus 2. So if 4n plus 2 is so great, is this bad? Is this compound anti-aromatic by some criterion? Well, how are you going to know whether it's anti-aromatic? What do you have to do? You have to make it, study its properties, to see whether it's sort of opposite of benzene. Okay, so in fact, in the 1960s, it was made, maybe, by this way, starting with a compound called alpha-pyrone. I know that Dr. Ziegler mentioned to you pyranose and pyran, a six-membered ring with oxygen in it, right? And it has two double bonds. So here's a six-membered ring containing oxygen with two double bonds, but it also has a ketone, right? So it's pyrone. And that ketone is in the position next to the oxygen, alpha pyrone. But anyhow, it was found that you could do this reaction to make a four-membered ring with a double bond in it, with a single double bond. Now, to do that, they used light. It's not a thermal reaction, it's a photochemical reaction. Here's a review question. Why to do that reaction did they have to use light? Why not just use heat? Back. Right. And you had to do it in order to get disrotation. Remember how conrotation and disrotation? If you want to bring those two things together like this, here's a hydrogen here, here's a hydrogen here. In the starting material, the whole thing was flat and these hydrogens were out here. You had to rotate one this way and one this way to have them come together. And that requires that you promote one of the electrons. Okay, so it had to be a disrotatory process to do that. And now this is set up to lose a rather stable molecule. What molecule can this lose? It's not going to be hard for you to know, because think what you're trying to go toward. Right, you can lose CO2 like that. But once again, that reaction has to be done with light. Because if you have, it's the reverse of 2 pi, 2 pi, 2 pi, 2 electrons pi here, 2 electrons pi here. If they come together and you try to form a four-membered ring, you're trying to mix HOMO with HOMO and LUMO with LUMO. You have to use light to make one of the HOMO's electrons from the HOMO to the LUMO, and then you can get HOMO-LUMO mixing and do this. So anyhow, the same is true in the reverse reaction. So they use light to knock out CO2. So now they had made, or they hoped they had made, cyclobutadiene, but they weren't able to study its properties, or they were able, more properly, to study only one of its properties, because two of the molecules come together and they react with one another in this way. Right? Now, what do you call that reaction? Where a double bond reacts with a diene. Yeah? Can't hear very well. It's a Diels-Alder reaction. Okay? So this bond becomes a single bond here. This one was pre-existing. This is a new bond. This is a new bond. This is a new bond. Now, that's the Diels-Alder reaction, as we say. This molecule doesn't look very stable to you. Why? Ahmed? Shafkat? What looks bad about that molecule to you? It's pretty darn strained, right? With four cyclobutanes all together with one another. So it breaks the bonds in the middle, breaks these two bonds. Oh, I drew it wrong. It's supposed to have a double bond here and a double bond here. I'll correct that. Okay? So even though that reaction is 2 pi plus 2 pi, or the reverse of 2 pi plus 2 pi, and is formally forbidden the same way as this one was, it happens anyhow because it's just so much downhill because of the strain. Okay, so if you try to make this stuff, what you get is cyclooctatetraene, right? So that may be presumptive evidence that cyclobutadiene is not very stable the way benzene is, that it reacts with itself to do this. But what you'd rather do is get some evidence other than the fact that it's too reactive to keep, right? Maybe spectroscopy or something like that. Now, what's the fundamental problem with trying to prepare a sample so that you can do spectroscopy on it? That it reacts with itself. So if you could get a single molecule and have it trapped inside something so that it couldn't find another molecule, then you could do the trick. Okay? So you, if you want to make and study anti-aromatic cyclobutadiene, you have to make it inside a bottle. It's like making a ship in a bottle. Okay, so if you had a sort of cage, right, that could open up and get that starting material in there and then clamp down, and now do your reactions and make cyclobutadiene, then inside that cage you may be able to study it. And this is the cage that they made, which had the guest inside. And it looks like sort of a daunting challenge to make this particular ship in the bottle. Or more, the bottle, it looks like a challenge to make. Right? And notice that it's almost symmetrical. Right? It has a bridge here between the top and the bottom, a bridge here in the back, a bridge in the front, but it doesn't have a bridge here. The reason is you have to have that mouth in order to get a molecule in or out. Okay, now this work was done by Donald Cram at the UCLA, who got the Nobel Prize for making things inside things. Okay? Or studying complexes of this sort. But the second author is Tanner, Martin Tanner. Have you ever heard the name Tanner before? That's the guy who burned his eyebrows off with the Nike rocket fuel. But that's actually the father of Martin Tanner. This is Tanner Fies, who made this molecule. I mean, he's the one that actually made it. Cram was his boss. Okay, so in order to have a molecule that's as big as that, tends not to be soluble, right? So they put on these floppy R groups, CH2CH2 phenyl, in order that they could manipulate this stuff. So those are for solubility. They're four R's on top, four R's on the bottom. They're all the same, CH2CH2 phenyl. And they were made from this aldehyde, right? By forming bonds here. We're going to talk about that. But they needed this starting material, and they needed a lot of it. Okay? So where are you going to get that starting material? That material is called dihydrocinnamaldehyde, because cinnamaldehyde, the stuff that gives the odor to cinnamon, is this double bond. Now, can you think of a way of helping them out to make that? Yeah, Henry? Okay, so you can go from cinnamaldehyde to dihydrocinnamaldehyde by catalytic hydrogenation, which is indeed what they did. But where did they have to harvest a lot of cinnamon to get that much cinnamaldehyde? Right? They needed a lot. You'll see the yield of making this big thing is not very high overall. Right? So where are you going to get cinnamaldehyde? What functional group does it have? Yeah?
Aldehyde?
Yes, what else?
A double bonded C.
Right.
And a phenyl.
And a phenyl, right. Good. Okay, you remember your functional groups. Right. But there's something special about this aldehyde. It's not... Madeline? I can't hear. It's conjugated. It's an alpha-beta unsaturated aldehyde. Where do you hear about alpha-beta unsaturated aldehydes? Don? The aldol reaction. So what do you need in an aldol reaction? You put two things together to make this double bond. Right? This anion attacks a carbonyl here, and then you lose water from the aldol product. So what was the starting material? What was the starting material at the top that would make this the anion here, CH2 anion, that's then going to attack a carbonyl? Or you can take your choice. You can either name the molecule at the top or name the molecule at the bottom that gets attacked. And whoever volunteers first can get their choice. The other one I'm going to ask someone. Yeah.
Benzaldehyde.
It's benzaldehyde at the bottom, our old friend. Right? Nobody let Dr. Ziegler set me up on talking about the benzoin condensation. I knew he wanted you to find out whether I knew that Wohler had done that. Okay, but here's our old friend benzaldehyde again at the bottom, and on the top is acetaldehyde, right? So you react those with acid, you'll get cinnamaldehyde, then you do a reduction, and so we got tons and tons of this stuff to work with. It's really accessible. Okay, now here's the molecule we want to make with the guest inside in that mouth, so we can get that guest out and put something else in. But it'll be hard enough that it'll be able to go in and out, that we can retain the guest. Okay, so you can see there's a certain symmetry to this. There are two hemispheres that have been put together to make that cage. So here's the southern hemisphere of it, the same as the northern hemisphere. It's just upside down. Now, was there a question? No, okay. Okay, so how do we form this ring that has 16 carbons in it? Notice there's a high symmetry. Okay? It's done by the top molecules are resorcinol, dihydroxybenzene. And the bottom molecules, as we've already tipped our hand, come from this dihydrocinnamaldehyde. Now, how are you going to be able to form a bond like this one between this carbon and this benzene, between this carbon and this benzene? So we want to put the carbon on and take hydrogen off. What kind of reaction would you call that? On the benzene, we put carbon on, take hydrogen off. You ever seen such a reaction? This is review. Of course, you have almost a week before the exam, but it's not too early. Yeah? It's like Friedel-Crafts. It's an electrophilic aromatic substitution. So in what form does this carbon have to be in order to attack? An anion? A cation? A free radical? What does electrophilic aromatic substitution, what kind of things attack? Pardon me? Electrophiles. So you need something like C plus. Now, of course, there's a low LUMO here already, pi star. But there's a way to make it a lower LUMO. What is that? Pardon me? Protonate it. Okay, now we have C plus, so we can do an electrophilic aromatic substitution. Incidentally, would it be easy or hard, do you think, to do electrophilic aromatic substitution on that particular substituted benzene? Do the OHs help or hurt it? Victor? They help, right? Because when you get a cation, the unshared pair, even though oxygen could be thought of as electron withdrawing, its unshared pairs get stabilized by mixing with the low LUMO that you're generating, right? So in what position would you tend to attack? Here, here, here? What kind of directing effect does a group like OH have? Is it orthopara or meta-directing? What? It's orthopara. So this is ortho to this one and para to this one. This is meta to both. Forget that. This is equivalent to that. This one is ortho to both, but probably a little bit crowded. So the best place is probably to do the substitution there. That's the way it's written, the way it's drawn, and in fact that happens because the OH is activating and orthopara directing. Now you're going to need this bond as well. How are you going to do that? Pardon me? It's dehydration in the sense that you lose OH here and an H from resorcinol. But what kind of reaction is it?
Deprotonate again.
Not you said deprotonate. I don't think that's what you meant.
Protonate.
Yeah. Like this, and then, right, so now we can do it with another one. Okay, another electrophilic aromatic substitution. Okay, so we got those two bonds. Now, but we have to make a whole ring. How are we going to do this? Well, just keep going. All those bonds are the same. Can you anticipate any difficulties in this? Yeah. Pardon me? So the size of the ring, it could be different sizes of rings you'd get. Or it could just make a long chain. Right? Or there's this particular problem of stereochemistry. Notice you want this H to be pointing out toward us. This H to be pointing toward us. That one back and that one back. So all these things are going down. There are stereoisomers here that are in question. Right? As to the configuration of each of these carbons you're making. Right? So it looks like a recipe for real trouble if you just mix these things together and let them cook. Right? But in fact, the initial addition is reversible. It goes on and off, so you get all these different isomers, or many of them at least, and different ring sizes. But what they found was that the desired one with four units in the ring, four resorcinols and four hydrocinnamaldehydes, in the correct stereoisomer precipitated in a yield of 69%. How about that? Your lab doesn't work that way, I bet, generally. But they lived right. Right? So they got a 69% yield of that stuff from cinnamaldehyde just by the fact that it crystallized better than anything else. So sometimes you're lucky. Not very often, but in this case they were. So they could get a fair amount of this material to start with. And now they're halfway there. Right? They've made the whole bottom of this thing. And also the whole top. So the only problem now is to put them together. Okay? So the first thing they did was to react with Br+. Actually, they used N-bromosuccinamide as the source of electrophilic bromine. We talked about that, but I'm not going to dwell on it now. So Br+ goes on, H+ comes off. What do you call that reaction? Robin? Yep, electrophilic aromatic substitution. It's a bromination. Now, where are you going to brominate? You could brominate these rings. Those are benzene rings. You could brominate here, or you could brominate here. Right, so it's another, looks like another problem brewing as to getting a horrid mixture, right? Can anybody see that one might be favored over others? Matt? Can't hear very well. The one at the top, the very topmost of those rings on the top, is ortho to two activating groups, right? The bottom one of the top rings is meta. These are not activated. So it'll brominate at those top positions. Right? Now, they wanted to do only three of them, not four. Right? So here there's sort of a problem. They only put in three moles. But of course, some of the molecules would react four times, some would react two times, some wouldn't react at all. And when you put in only two, you could put in two that are opposite one another or two that are adjacent to one another on the ring. So you're going to get lots of different stuff out of that. Right? And they got a mixture of tetrasubstituted and this trisubstituted and two disubstituted analogs. And they just carried on with that horrid mixture for a while until they separated. Okay, now they want to put, or maybe, actually I think maybe they crystallized them apart at that. Oh no, I know it. No, they carried on at that point. Okay, then they want to, so they got bromines here. And now they want to stitch these things together. And they want to do it with an oxygen in place of a bromine, then CH2. Wait a second. Oh, no, I haven't finished the bottom yet. I'm sorry, I said I'd finish the bottom, but I haven't put in these. Right? Okay, the teeth of the jaw here. Okay, so the next thing, we want to put a bridge from here across to here. And that's done by using bromochloromethane. So you make the anions, so there's base. Treat it with bromochloromethane. You get an SN2 first to replace bromine, then to replace chlorine, and you have a bridge. Okay? And then you do it with the others. So now we have the bottom. The bromines we had put in previously in order to be able to hook the two halves together. I got a little ahead of my story there. Okay, so now we have the bottom and the top. Now we want to use the bromines to build those bridges. And at this point, they did a chromatography to separate it, and they got a 5% yield from the tetramer, right? Because it had all these different isomers that we talked about before. But this is still pretty good, because they had 69% here and now 5% here. And remember, they could start with tons and tons of benzaldehyde and acetaldehyde. Those are really cheap things. So they still had enough material to work with. Okay. Now they want to make this thing with the guest inside. They want to join the hemispheres. Okay? And the way they do it is treat it with butyl lithium. Now, we've mentioned this in passing, but we didn't stress it, so it's not quite fair to ask you to remember it. But there's a process called halogen metal interchange, where two R groups, one has a halogen on it, the other has a metal on it. They come together and they trade partners, which has a halogen and which has a metal. And you the thing that drives it in one direction is to get the carbon anion that's more stable attached to the metal. Now here we have a phenyl ring, which is sp squared, a pretty good anion. This one is sp cubed, not such a good place to put electrons in an sp cubed orbital. So if you treat this with a halogen metal interchange, you get the more stable aryl anion or lithium compound. So now we have lithiums on there. Okay. And the next reaction is to treat that with a borate, BOR3. What will make that reactive? Mustafa? The empty orbital on bromine, and what will do the attacking? Where's the high HOMO? It's going to attack it. Where is there a functional group in this molecule that has a high HOMO to attack the boron? Right? The carbons with lithiums on them, right, have a high HOMO. So this aryl group will attack boron, right? So it'll add AR minus to B, but then that thing, that it'll be B minus, and now it can lose something. But an even better anion than the aryl anion is the OR anion. That's what'll be lost. So this is a little bit like these carbonyl substitutions, you know, where you bring in one nucleophile and another one leaves. Okay, so now we have those lithiums are replaced by BOR2s. Okay. And the next reaction is to react that with hydrogen peroxide and base. Has anybody ever seen anything like this before? To have a boron compound attacked by hydrogen peroxide, what will it do? Don? It's like hydroboration, oxidation, right? The oxidation part was the same reagent. Okay, so hydrogen peroxide comes in and adds to the B minus to give B minus. And now you insert oxygen between boron and the carbon. And we've just been talking about things like this, right? So the group on the boron shifts to oxygen, the hydroxide leaves. Right? Remember we had the Beyer-Villiger oxidation, which inserted an oxygen. Same deal. Right? The base comes back in, and now the OAR leaves from that. Okay? So we got these hydroxides, and now, so all those groups are now converted to hydroxide. Why did you want to do that? Because that's what's going to be doing the linking, an oxygen from one side to the other. So those bromines were put on first, right? So that loses the more stable ARO minus anion. And notice the purpose of all these things that we've been doing. The purpose was they wanted to have three oxygens in a row, right? But to use them for different things. So they wanted to use these to bridge across here, and these to go up at the top. So they didn't want to have them all there at the beginning, because you'd get all mixed up what was reacting with what. So they put in a hidden OH group in the form of bromine, right? And then they did these reactions to take the bromine off and convert it into OH. So now they have the OH to do it. So it's a little bit like a protecting group in the spirit of it. Okay, so now we want to build those bridges. How are we going to put carbon atoms between the top and the bottom? Can you think of any way of linking two oxygens with a CH2? Yeah.
Did we do it with the CH2?
Right, it's precisely how we put this in. Link two oxygens with CH2. So they did the same process again, right? And they got a 40% yield of that. You know, you could have linked the wrong things together. It didn't have to be the right three things coming together. You could have got two of them like that, or two like this, then the others dangling. But in fact, they got the correct stuff in a 40% yield for that reaction. And remember, it started out, there was a 69% yield, then a 5% yield, and now a 40% yield. So overall, it was 1%. But still, that gave them enough material to work with. So they got the stuff, and now the idea is get the guest out and put in the stuff you want to study as the ship in the bottle. So this is a stereo pair picture. If you use your eyes properly, you can see this in three dimensions. But you want it to be smaller to do this, so you can shrink it on your computer screen. So this is the actual structure of a crystal of the product they made. Now, here at the top and the bottom, you see these green things. That's solvent, chloroform, that's inside the crystal. And just above and below that, you see these blinking things, which are acetonitrile, CH3CN, which was also a solvent that was used, right? But notice that those are not inside the sphere. They're out where molecules meet other molecules in the crystal, right? Inside is this, which is dimethylformamide. That's held inside this cavity. But remember, it's got a mouth here. So if you warm it, it's possible to get it out. It has a half-life of 34 hours for coming out at 140 Celsius. So it's held tightly enough that if you don't heat it, it'll stay in there. But if you warm it, you can get it out and get in what you want. Yeah?
Why wouldn't it react with the molecule and just stay in there?
Why wouldn't the cage react with it? Because the molecule inside is not a particularly reactive molecule. It was a solvent that was being used. Okay. So I think I see it's 11:22 now. I have two more slides. I could finish the story now, or we can put it down at the beginning next time. Which do you prefer? Finish now? Okay, we'll get to the punchline. Okay, so here's alpha pyrone that we talked about before, the stuff that you can make cyclobutadiene out of. Okay, so now here's a picture, space-filling model of that. Here's where the alpha pyrone goes. So here's the alpha pyrone. Here's the NMR spectrum, proton NMR spectrum of this stuff. So it's got all these benzene rings and whatnot, CH2 groups and so on, that are part of the cage. But then it has things that are not part of the cage. These four hydrogens, here, 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 here. Are any of them equivalent to others? No. So you should see four peaks in the NMR. So here's the NMR of that stuff, and there are four new peaks. Actually, there are three new peaks, because one of them comes under this big peak from the starting material, some of the CH2 groups that are out on here, these things. Okay, now I'm not going to go through. I was going to go through and say, which of the hydrogens do you think is which, right, to review NMR of the four hydrogens that are here. But let me not do that now. You can do it yourself. Okay, then they photolyze this stuff, right, which closes the ring to give this. So this has four hydrogens, and they're not equivalent. And now you can see all four of them. And again, you can go through and try to figure out which one should be which one, do you think? Okay, then they did that last photolysis to knock out CO2. And they get this. Just one peak. So it's symmetrical now. Right? Now, is it anti-aromatic? What do you see with benzene? What's unusual about the NMR? Henry? It's got diamine, and it's way downfield because of the diamagnetic anisotropy. What do you see about cyclobutadiene? It's way upfield. But you have to think about this and make sure that that's real. Okay? So it looks like it's an anti-aromatic upfield shift. Right? Now, normal benzene comes about 7.5 parts per million. But if you put benzene inside this cage, the benzene comes here at about 4. Now, why should a benzene inside that cage be relative shifted upfield by 3 parts per million or 3.5? Derek? Which ones? No. You remember how diamagnetic anisotropy works? Here's a benzene ring. The hydrogens that are outside the benzene ring are feeling the field coming up.
Circulation.
That? I can't hear. There are a whole bunch of other benzene rings. The walls of the cage are benzene rings. Right? And the stuff that's in the middle is sitting above those rings, not out beside them. Right? All those, it's above each of those. Right? So the diamagnetic anisotropy of those causes things to shift upfield. But, so most of the shift that's unusual of this is just comes because it's inside the cage. Right? Comes from the other rings. But still, it's 1.5 parts per million up above benzene. So that's some one line of evidence that there is some anti-aromatic character, the opposite of benzene, that's associated with cyclobutadiene. But it required making this very unusual, unnatural product in order to get the stuff so you could actually study it and do the spectroscopy. So that's the end of that one. Thank you. So next time we'll talk about a natural product and its synthesis. Just a second, let me turn this off here and I'll be with you.